You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century.
Join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together. If you're loving this podcast, we invite you to go deeper and partner with us in our work by joining the Gravity Commons, our online community of practice for connecting and learning together.
As a member of the Gravity Commons, you get access to live podcast recordings with upcoming guests, as well as other opportunities to connect and learn together with us in real time.
Including learning labs, member meetups, discussion boards, online courses, and our practitioner podcast. Go to gravityleadership.com/commons to find out more. See you in the commons.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. My name is Ben Sternke. I am one of your co-hosts. I'm here today with co-host and friend, partner in crime, all the crimes we do, Matt. Matt Tebby's here as well.
Do I need to get a lawyer for this intro? Sounds like I need to get a lawyer. Yeah. You're implicating
no,
me.
No, you just don't feel free to just say all your crimes.
Look.
All the crimes.
I'm an Enneagram 4. You know this. You know I always have a guilty conscience, and I don't know if I appreciate you exploiting that publicly.
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm so sorry. I wasn't intending to exploit you. It's a turn of phrase. But
I do anyway. Like to be exploitative in my vulnerability, so I'll be tweeting my repentance later.
Yes.
I'll make up some crimes and be really sorry for them and self-indulgent in my sadness about them. All right? You happy now?
Yeah. Okay. That sounds great. I'm super happy.
What you want? Is this the world you wanted?
I expect nothing less. Hey, by the way, listeners, you'll note that Christy is not with us today. And the only reason that Christy can't join us for this intro to this podcast is that she is again having internet issues. So I don't know what's going on out there in Colorado. I don't know if there's any friends that live in Colorado that can just like that know about internet stuff.
Hey,
I don't know if there's like prayer warriors out there.
There's
like maybe in there's
Colorado Springs.
And
are you listening? You need to
Colorado
fix it.
Springs.
Get in shape.
Fix it.
Enough of this. Knock it off.
Get in shape. If anybody knows any like officials in Colorado Springs that you can appeal to get some fiber in there or something, it is nuts how difficult it is to get good internet to Christy's home so she can join us on these podcasts. So we're calling, it's an APB, calling all units, you know? Pray for Christy's internet. If you know any, anybody in Colorado Springs, it appears to be an infrastructure problem. It's like she just can't get good internet.
Yeah.
So anyway,
anyway, who doesn't struggle with internet? You know who doesn't struggle with internet, Ben?
Who's that?
Catherine McNeil, our guest today on the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Great segue. That's exactly what we talked about with her on this interview. Internet.
Yeah. Her signal was great. And we didn't talk much about it because it wasn't an issue, but we talked to her today about...
You only have to talk about the internet when it's an issue.
We talked to her today about love, how love interacts differently with people based upon their proximity and their relationship to us, neighbors, strangers, and even enemies. Catherine was thoroughly delightful to chat with, and her book is incredible. So I commend this podcast to you.
Yeah. Yeah. We do these intros, mm-hmm. you know, just to kind of see what's going on, like in the life of kind of Gravity right now. But also just to tell you, like, hey, we had a great interview. We don't tend to release bad interviews.
Nope.
Like every once in a while, I feel like we have one and we just decide not to release it. So the only ones that get on. So if you've been on our podcast and you've never heard it publicly released, I'm joking. but no, we want to commend this interview to you. Catherine's mm-hmm. great. I was not familiar with her before this interview, as is the case with a lot of our interviews.
Yeah.
And we're going to meet a lot of cool people. The work that she does in this book. That's kind of the cool part about this job. You mm-hmm. get to meet a lot of cool people. So
yeah.
Anyway, Catherine's cool. Here's our interview with her.
Today, we're happy to welcome Catherine McNeil. She's the author of Fearing Bravely, Risking Love for Our Neighbors, Strangers, and Enemies. Catherine writes about the creative and redemptive work of God in our lives. She's the author of two other books as well, Long Days of Small Things and All Shall Be Well. Catherine studies theology, has three kids she keeps alive and cares for. She's got a big garden and has two jobs, and in all that has found time to join us today on the Gravity Podcast. Catherine, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Two jobs. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah. You know, I... at the time that I said that, I was doing two very different kinds of writing. One was the book, Spiritual Formation, devotional... and the other was kind of marketing and donor development copy. It's still, it's both writing, but it's two really different muscles.
Yes.
As someone who is currently doing both of those kinds of writing, I definitely know what you mean.
Yeah, but it's fun. And it's good to go back and forth.
Cool. Well, we're talking about not the donor writing today, but the spiritual formation writing today, yeah?
Yeah.
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 So you wrote this book, Fearing Bravely. And it's a book about reckoning with the reality of fear in our lives and learning to live faithfully with it. And what struck me, I don't know, maybe we can jump in here. What struck me is, you know, there's a lot of, kind of, we live in a no fear culture where it's really super trendy, or it's what's brave is to demonstrate no fear, right? And sometimes there's a triumphalistic kind of "I kissed fear goodbye" sort of thing in the Christian world, but your book is much more of an invitation to sort of befriend fear and live to tell about it.
Yeah,
and I wonder if you could just tell us, how did you get to that place with fear in your life, and then how did you come to decide to write a book about that?
Well. How long do you have? Those are great questions. you know, I do in Fearing Bravely, I mention that fear is like a frenemy. I think we don't take a lot of close analysis of the role that fear plays in our life. And as I did that, I felt that a frenemy was the best term I could come up with. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It kind of means like a friend that's kind of toxic, you know? And what strikes me is how very necessary fear is. Like, I don't think it was really important to me that we don't title this like "No Fear" or "Faith Over Fear" or any kind of a slogan that would fail to recognize that fear is a really important component of our human psyche and our packaging. If I don't realize that the stove is hot and that the fire is going to burn me and that the car's whizzing by on Interstate 80 are going to kill me, I won't live very long. And it's important for us to realize that there are guardrails to our existence and there are limits, and we need to be aware of that. But on the other hand, we, I think, become slaves to fear, and we become addicted to fear. And just like anything that our body needs, our bodies can be exploited to feed into these things over and over and over again until we lose all sense of moderation or wisdom or health even. And it's interesting that you said we have a no-fear culture, because I think that our rhetoric might be saying, no fear, go for it. In fact, I think we're being fed a steady, steady diet of fear, constantly being told warnings, constantly learning to see our neighbors, definitely strangers, definitely enemies, from a perspective of again, warning and be careful and this is not safe. And I think we're becoming more and more isolated in our self-preservation. And what we're not realizing, the warnings we're not really grappling with, is what is the danger of isolation? What is the danger of being so afraid of my fellow humans that I can't even engage in the world, especially for Christians? How do we engage in the world that God has asked us to be very busy in, seeking the peace and prosperity of our cities, loving sacrificially our neighbors and even strangers and even enemies? How can we do that if we are so wrapped up in self-preservation? So that's why I wanted to write this book. I really wanted to wrestle with kind of the narratives that I was hearing constantly in society, especially in Christian society, and the enormous gap and contrast that I see in what Jesus is saying and how Jesus lived and how Jesus is calling his followers to live and engage.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad you brought in the toxicity of fear, or sort of the addiction to fear, you know? I think somebody somewhere along the lines in human civilization realized that if you stimulate the amygdala, you can get a lot of people to do a lot of things with a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's nice that we've progressed past that as a culture, and now no one uses fear and anger to motivate people to do things. No, I think...
Oh, that's lovely fiction.
No, I think you rightly identify that we can get fear jacked up in many ways. And maybe we can press into this, the work that the word fear does in the English language. It's such a big word, right? So you talk about how fear is a gift. So if a wolf is coming for my child, one of the three kids that I mentioned you're keeping alive on a day-to-day basis, then it's good to have some sort of fear so you can respond with virtue to rescue your child.
Yes.
But that fear then gets sort of hijacked or hooked. And so then we see not just a wolf as danger, but we see like 10,000 wolves.
Yeah.
You know, like everything's a wolf. Why is that? Like, and how do you experience that? Like, what are some of the temptations for you either to give in to sort of this hijacking of fear or this bypassing even of fear?
Well, you know, you started out by talking about how now we don't exploit the amygdala for our own power and gain. You know, you could write the history of humanity by looking at the ways that people with power or people who wanted power used our very natural, good, and normal fears and exploited them to make us reliant on these powerful people or would-be powerful people. And that has happened through small tribes and large empires throughout history, but it's absolutely happening right now in our own society. Whether it's the weatherman who wants me to keep listening through the ads because there's a storm coming my way, or it's television broadcasters or politicians, or unfortunately even a lot of Christian voices are saying, I've got a warning for you, and it is so important that you keep on tuning in and diverting your time and your energy and your money and your heart and your formation over to me, because this is dangerous. And what ends up happening is that we become formed by these fears. And if you look at the world that Jesus was living in, He was living in the Roman Empire. He was a citizen of an occupied country of the Roman Empire that regularly just picked up guys and crucified them along the side of the road as a warning. Like, you don't want to cross us. And I don't know that many of us can really get into the psychological trauma of that kind of fear-mongering. And yet, it was in that situation that Jesus said to his followers, don't be afraid, but instead love each other, serve each other. Even the people that gross you out, that drive you crazy, live a life of active love and service. And it wasn't because there weren't dangers. There were, and Jesus suffered this same humiliating public death. But I think because God knows the only way out of our fear that becomes fearfulness, that becomes danger, is for us to opt out and say, love is the force that can turn an enemy into a friend. Love is the force that can take a society rife with injustice and oppression and create some beauty and create a different path. So I don't think that Jesus was ever... I think I'm probably losing sight of your question, but I don't think Jesus was ever saying, everything's fine, you know? Take a Pollyannish approach to life. He was saying the stakes are so high, and we can so easily become the dangerous oppressors ourselves because, mm-hmm. like you said, once you've had that terrible experience with a wolf, you're ready to attack. You're going to attack first next time, but what if it's... what if it's your neighbor who's coming? What if it's your friend?
Yeah, and what if you've become the wolf without realizing it, right? What if you've become the powerful one who actually has power, but you act as if someone else has power over you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Catherine, you mentioned the word love, and I know this is a big theme in the book, and obviously scripturally, right? Love drives out fear. We know that from the New Testament. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how love and fear are related, because I think, and actually, as we're recording this, I'm preparing to preach a sermon on Luke 6, where Jesus says, love your enemies. And I think we get this passage and we get this idea wrong. You alluded to it a little bit in your answer to the previous question, where I think sometimes we think of love your enemies as like sort of take a chill pill, relax, right? Take this like relaxed, like feel affectionate towards people who are hurting you and hurting others, right? So what is it, like maybe just tease that out for us, both the what it actually looks like to love our neighbors in a fierce way that actually opposes injustice, like you talked about. And also like, what is love's relationship to fear, and how do those interact in scripture and in our lives?
Yeah, well, I'll start with how they interact in scripture and in our lives. You know, again and again throughout the Bible, God's prophets, Jesus, the writers of the epistles are putting the two together and saying perfect love casts out fear. The one who is afraid has not been made perfect in love. Paul says in Romans that it's through this active agape love of serving each other, of sharing everything that we have, of laying our lives down for others, that we overcome evil. And he talks about enemies. He uses words like enemy and persecutor there. But what really gets me is how active overcoming evil is. Like you're saying, it's not just sort of like laying down and letting evil take over because we're not going to do anything about it. The thing that we're doing about evil is subverting it inside out through love. And I think part of the reason why this is so urgent is because, like you said, we become the wolf. And that weighs on me so heavily in our current time and place that we have been so profoundly warned about those people that we have stopped being in a relationship with those people, and we don't know who they are, and we don't know what they think or believe or what they feel, how their hearts are breaking. We don't know how to be neighbors to them. We have lost the ability even to imagine them as a potential neighbor. We can only see, you can't hear my scare quotes, listener, but I'm doing scare quotes here. We can't see those people as anything but an enemy, and we can only imagine responding to our enemies by striking first. But what if these are just men, women, and children like ourselves in need of a friend, and we're the ones bringing the violence. We're the ones bringing the neglect. That weighs on me so heavily. And as a person, I want to really look at that blind spot that I know humans have and have always had. But as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, we must. This is urgent for us. If our fears are keeping us from loving the very people that God has sent us to engage, if our fears keep us from overcoming evil with love, but instead we're contributing to evil, that's devastating.
Hi, I'm Deb from Ormond Beach, Florida. One of the best gifts that I received for my journey through a Gravity Leadership cohort was a new perspective on flourishing in life and in ministry. I didn't realize how much of my discipleship was formed by call-out culture. My whole orientation was toward calling out what was wrong or sinful in the world, in my own life, and in the church. But Gravity helped me see that Christ was always calling people in toward life and flourishing. And my cohort came to feel kind of like a community garden. We got to practice calling each other in to a deeper awareness of God's life, of His goodness and His love, and how it was bearing fruit in our lives. So if you're looking for a safe space to grow in your life with God and to practice your gardening skills in the life of others, I hope you'll check out the Gravity Leadership Academy.
To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
I am reminded again that we use words like love in conversations like this, and we sort of assume we all know what we mean, but I've come to suspect that we all mean different things by that, or we actually don't quite know what love is. And so I wonder if you could speak maybe more pointedly to how love, so instance, you talk about these three groups of people, right? You talk about love for neighbors and love for strangers and love for enemies. Those we know, those we don't know, and those who should know better, maybe. who are up to shenanigans and no good. Mm-hmm. What's the work love does in, say, drawing a neighbor close? And how's that different than, like, the work love does in, like, causing a person holding a rock to drop it and walk away?
Wow. Well, starting with the neighbors, I guess, they're the closest ones.
Yeah.
I was really struck by how much we view all of these questions from an individualist frame. We really think that Jesus is talking to Catherine or to Matt or to Ben and saying, Catherine, I know it's hard for you to love Ben and Matt. It's not actually, but you know, but work on it, you know, work on it. But when you look at this from kind of putting aside our American individualism that we really can't put it aside, I don't think we will succeed at seeing outside of our cultural frame, but, Jesus is saying in this command, and it was understood at the time, based on the scholars that I've leaned on, that Jesus was saying, hey, you all, care for the whole community the way you care for your own families. And that is such a game changer. That's such a mic drop moment. And then when Jesus extends that, look out, you know, make decisions and wrestle with right and wrong and wrestle with how things are going to go down, not just thinking about what will benefit my own family. How can I use my own privilege, resources to benefit my own family? But how can I use these things for the good of the entire community? Then strangers and enemies get enveloped in that pretty quickly. And we start having to look at things like, systematic oppression and injustice and ways that my resources and my privilege are going to feed myself and not benefiting others. So I think when we take off this individualist frame and we start realizing that Jesus was calling a group of people to work for the larger group, and then he put no boundaries on where that larger group ends, but it extends to all of humanity, and there's no loophole. I can't be like, well, yeah, but I don't know that guy, or yeah, but that woman, I don't like her. Like, there's no loophole for us to say, I will work, not I, see, I fell into it myself. We sure. will work for the good of all people, no matter what. Enemies get eclipsed in that pretty quickly. And I, to you know, put teeth to it like you asked, I hesitate to give specific pieces of advice because it's all so locally driven. Like the injustices, the evil, they all have such a local and specific face that I think we do have to wrestle with these things together in our local contexts. And I can't just kind of offer a cliche that's going to overcome evil for all the communities of people who are listening today. But it's not an easy love, like you said. The word that's often being used here is agape, and it's used in a verb sense. And it means really active. It means doing things we don't want to do to benefit the person on the other end or the community on the other end or the group of people on the other end. At minimum, I long for our conversations to change because so many of our conversations about people that we would consider strangers or enemies are just drenched in warning and fear and us and them language and they're taking something from us or they're threatening us in some way. What if our, at least among Christ followers, if our language of love for enemies said, there is evil in the world, it is real and it is tangible, how can we structure our lives in this actual community in such a way that we are subverting evil from the inside out and the ground up, not just putting wallpaper over it, not fleeing, but not hiding either? How do we overcome? So I'm not going to give like kind of three steps because those will just be cliches, but we have to change the conversation.
Yep.
Yeah,
I agree.
Catherine, I think it's helpful for me when I think about loving enemies, it's helpful for me to remember that the system of oppression, the evil that we're all caught up in that causes one to oppress another, is dehumanizing for all of us,
yes.
right? And so part of loving my enemy who is oppressing me or hurting me, part of loving them is calling them out of that oppression. And to do that, I have to name it as oppression. I have to name it as evil. I have to name it for them and say, what you're doing is wrong. This is how I'm loving you, by naming the thing that you're doing that's dehumanizing both of us. And we love them by naming it as evil, but also then calling them into something better. So those embodied sort of forms of kingdom community that you talked about, I think that's part of, you know, we name the harm, but we also say another way is possible and you can join us. You can be part of this. You're not excluded from this, but you need to put away your, you know, your wicked ways. And I really appreciate too the way that you talk about this as being, this has to be embodied in a community. Right? These aren't just sort of individualistic ethical injunctions that Jesus gives us that happens like inside of our hearts. It is something that must be cultivated in a community that's able to embody love for strangers and neighbors and enemies. So thank you. I'm just getting excited about what you're saying, Catherine. You are preaching to the choir here, but I'm loving it.
It sounds like, Ben, you're ready to give us the three steps that Catherine doesn't want to give us. So.
Oh, actually, the three steps, I wanted to say something about that, too. I wanted to say I appreciate you resisting the three steps because I think one of the things you said was that this demands courage and creativity and imagination. Yeah.
Like, so depending on the situation, there's no like one size fits all solution to resisting evil, to loving our enemies. Mm-hmm. There has to be, and I think even, you know, I mentioned I was preaching on Luke 6, even the examples Jesus gives there, right? Turning the other cheek, going the extra mile, giving the shirt and not just the coat. Like, even those, they're not like ethical injunctions that I have to figure out how to like do in every area of my life. They're just examples. Mm-hmm. Jesus is saying, for example, here's how you could subvert the power of someone slapping you in the face, is you exercise your initiative in an act that was meant to stop the conversation. You keep it going. Like it's just a way of being, it's a way of taking initiative in that situation. So I appreciate that you resist the urge to do the three-step thing because it is, it's sometimes that can end up subverting our own, like the call on each of us and each of our communities to actually creatively pray and imagine what it would look like in our situation to love our enemies. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we have to be, again, really courageous and reliant on God's love and grace that is what's powering this from beginning to end. There's no fear in love. So we don't need to move forward afraid or move forward anxious that God is angry with us because we're failing. Because you know what, guys? We're not going to make this. We're not going to get 100%. We're not going to hit the bar. But if we keep aiming together towards the bar, we'll make so much progress. And I'm so humbled by Jesus' description and the Bible's description of who the good guys and the bad guys are. I'm hearing Jesus say, it's the person seeking hospitality, the person who is poor or hungry or lacking or in need of justice. That's the person that God is saying, hey, here's the good guys. And it's those of us that have resources or wealth or privilege that Jesus is pointing a finger at. And somehow we've turned that really upside down. And I want us to have the courage to fear bravely enough to say, are the group of people that I think Jesus is frowning at actually the people that Jesus is covering with his wings? And
come on, Catherine!
What part of the story am I actually playing? God loving his enemies is a gift to us.
Yes.
Because we so often are the enemies. But if we can accept that love and accept that grace enough to take a hard look at ourselves and our society and where God is actually protecting and nurturing and lifting up, then we can join in kingdom work. And that is amazing.
Yes. That's salvation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For all of us.
For all of us. Yep. Yes. Beautiful.
Yep.
Beautifully said.
You're going to want to send Ben your PayPal link. He's ready to donate to
Are we taking up the offering now? Or what
yes.
are we doing?
So, Catherine, as you're talking, I'm realizing that the book that we all sort of come in our operating system with, one of the apps that comes preloaded for us is a cowardly fear that's filled with safe love. That is, you know, we can scapegoat everybody who is not us, and we can actually create a stronger us if the more we label people who aren't, and then we just we just treat people the way the Gentiles do, right? We just love people the way Gentiles do. But what you're calling us to is a courageous fear, like fearing bravely, which moves us out of this safe, insular, in-group love into a love that's with and for other people, that's seeking then to have like no partiality. Any dividing wall of hostility is torn down. Praise the Lord. And the gospel then gets right to the heart of our biases and prejudices and fears to bring one humanity in place of whatever two we want to invent.
Yes,
and
amen.
Make peace. Yeah, and so I just want to thank you for this book. Like I think the cultural moment we're in. I mean, we're always in this moment, right? We have no shortage of stories throughout human history where we have gotten this wrong. And I think our cultural moment today is one more time when we're trying to do the wrong thing again. Let's do it wrong better. And it's just, it always ends, guess what? Bad. So I feel like this book is a gift to us, to our listeners, to the church. Maybe we can close with, if someone finishes this book and they are moving back into their church family community, what are you hoping that they move into that, those spaces, those arenas, with something new, something fresh? Mm-hmm. What kinds of gifts are you hoping this book equips the saints with?
Wow. Whew, wow. Well, I touched on this before, but I long for our conversations to change. I hope that the reader who puts down this book and then walks back into his or her church or community or small group or, you know, library board or PTA is looking at some of our cultural assumptions of right and wrong and good guys and bad guys a little bit differently and realizing how difficult Jesus made drawing these lines. And is willing to have a conversation, willing to say, you know, it feels good to talk about those people in that way, but I'm hearing Jesus call us to this other thing. You know, I heard once that a way to deal with kind of cognitive dissonance is to be like, on the one hand, I'm hearing this, but on the other hand, I'm hearing this. And I think that's what I want the reader to do when he or she puts down the book. I want the reader to go into their real life communities and say, on the one hand, I'm hearing the Christian church or the Christians in America or the Christians in this room say, oh, we have to do this and watch out for that, or warnings about these people. But on the other hand, I'm hearing this life-giving, beautiful message of God and Jesus that is saying it's not going to be safe, but there's a kingdom for us to work for. And it's a kingdom where the blessed are not the ones we thought, and where all are set free and redeemed and made new and shalom and jubilee. And let's keep our eyes on that prize, not necessarily me being safe, me being protected and drawing a wall and drawing a line. Let's look at this more beautiful vision. And how can we overcome evil with good? By loving our neighbors and our strangers and our enemies.
Yes, the book again is called Fearing Bravely, Risking Love for Our Neighbors, Strangers, and Enemies. Catherine McNeil, if people are listening and they want to connect with you, how can they do that? Are you available out in the world wide webs?
I am so available on the interwebs. You can find me by looking up my name. If you spell it correctly, both Catherine and McNeil are both dangerous names to try to spell. But my website is CatherineMcNeil.com. My Twitter handle is at Catherine McNeil. Same for Instagram, same for Facebook.
All right.
You'll find me.
Yep.
And we'll make sure to spell those names correctly.
Yes.
That's right.
Once you learn how to spell it, you are unavoidable on the internet. You can find you anywhere. It's a unique spelling.
That's right. Yeah, so. I can't wait to see you all. Come hang out.
Yes.
Very good. All right. Well, some strangers will become neighbors, I'm sure, through this podcast. Catherine, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Joining our Gravity community is free. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our show is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast, and you can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Record button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
We'll be right back. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.